This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
My guest in the studio's name is Matteo Pignatelli, and every now and then I do a bit of a series around those people who are legends of our industry, and we have a bit of a chat about their career, how they got to be where they are, why they're still there, and how they manage. So unbeknownst to him, Matteo Pignatelli is here to be inducted into our Legends Hall of Fame. Welcome.
A bit young for that, aren't I, Pete?
Well, you've been doing this a long time, longer than most.
30 years, I suppose, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
35 years, but only 20 in North Fitzroy, so...
Yes, but 20 years for a restaurant in Melbourne is, given they change every 20 weeks, 20 years is probably a good thing.
About 18 months is the life of a current
standard restaurant. So where does the longevity come from?
Evolution, always evolving, changing, not just resting on your laurels, changing with the times, reading the market, being ahead of the market a little bit, and just providing the basics, really. It's
quite simple. How do you stay ahead of the market? Do you watch trends that are happening internationally?
You do watch trends that are happening, or just listening to customers, what they're liking to eat, what are they reading, trying to think trying to think where they're heading. But a lot of the time, I think the media used to set the trends, but I think now customers are setting the trends. Are they on health kicks? So it's reading a lot, I think, is and listening to the customer, and I think that's what a lot of people aren't doing at the moment.
Well, they forget the customer is the most important thing they have.
Well, you know, now you go to some places and you're made to feel like it's a privilege that you're there, whereas I think the privilege is a customer. The customer is God.
Absolutely, because they, at the end of the day, are the ones that are keeping your doors
open.
They
are the rock stars, not us.
Indeed. It's been 25 years since you graduated from William Angus in 1989.
You've done your homework, haven't you?
After winning individual awards for culinary studies, food and beverage operations, and most outstanding second-year student, were you always going to do well in this industry?
Well, I grew up in the industry, so my parents had a fish and chip shops, and with five children, Dad and I were making the pizzas. My sister Rosa was on the hamburgers. My sister Michelina was on the fish and chips. My brother Bonnie was on the chicken. So we had roast chicken, pizzas.
Fish and chips.
And when kids were going out at 10 years old, I was dragged by the ears to the dad's pizza shop to make pizzas. So missed out on a bit of a childhood. But
well, I guess what it did is form the rest of your life to date.
Well, it did. And it... In actual fact, growing up in the industry, I studied accounting. I thought, I can't do this. I don't like it. And actually went off and studied accounting, which, by the way, is a secret to my success.
Is because you're a good accountant, you know how to fiddle the books?
Yeah, well, I'm not allowed to say that.
But no, of course not. You worked part-time at places like Jacques Raymond, Masani's and Tansy's while you were studying.
Yes.
Is that where you picked up your skills for very, very good hospitality? Because it's one thing that I think you've always stood for in your business is fine hospitality. It's that sense of welcome and feeling like, as you say, that you walk in as a customer and you're God.
I worked in quite a few places while I was studying as well, because I wanted to learn. I even worked on a tram car restaurant for a few months just to see.
We've all been there. Yeah.
Just to see the different styles and just this hunger of thirst for people, what other businesses did and the way they ran it. And some of those places I learned a lot what not to do as well, which I won't mention which places. But working with Jacques was just amazing for 2 years. And
well, speaking of legends of our business.
Yeah, he is a legend and a lot of respect for Jacques.
He's a good man and will always be much loved. You then went and worked out in Glen Waverley, which 20 years ago wasn't the bustling community.
I was studying at William Angus, and I was going to go to Europe, and this guy approached me, Tony Fedeli, actually, and he said, I want to buy a restaurant. I said, what do you want to buy a restaurant for? This was in 89 when all the market was crashing. And he said, because I work at this place called Amaretto as a part-time waiter. This guy's loaded, very, you know, quite a humble man, but very rich. And I said, you don't want to buy a restaurant. You want to buy a reception center. You want to make money, you got to buy a reception center. But he convinced me into going to, I said, I'm happy to set it up for you, run it for you. And we bought this place in Glen Waverley for Deli's, which is still there.
Yep.
They were doing $10 all the pasta you can eat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just horrible, you know, coming from Jacques Ramon to Glen Waverley. And certainly I saw there was a market there, and the restaurant is still there, still going.
Joy 94.9.
My guest in the studio, Matteo Pignatelli, we are celebrating his 20 years of his restaurant and his career, which he tells me goes a little longer than that.
Actually worked with Guy Grossi.
You did, yes.
When he first started at Masani's.
When he was an apprentice?
He wasn't. I think he was about a fourth year apprentice, but he was the head chef. And we used to do a competition on who could do the most hours in 1 week. And I remember one Christmas, I did 98 hours in a week.
Yeah, and he beat you.
Because he slept in the car in the car park, so he can get in before me.
Right. That's. I mean, he's quite competitive, isn't he?
Oh, very competitive. Very competitive.
I'm assuming you can tell a lot of stories about the industry as you've seen the comings and goings. And
I won't be doing the Anthony Bourdain and probably revealing either.
No. We don't expect you to reveal because you still need to keep a successful business. 1994, so 20 years ago, you opened Matteo's. And, you know, as you've said, the secret to what you do is constantly evolving the business. So let's go back and revisit that. How do you stay ahead of the game and how do you not get tired or bored?
Well, I think when I was at William Angelus, they used to do this thing about, you know, marketing, and it was a product, place,
price and
position,
promotion,
packaging.
Yes.
But I've always believed the five P's are people,
piss ups.
A couple of those. Just never forget. I've never forgotten that we're in hospitality. That's, you know, let's not forget that. It's all about hospitality, and hospitality is about generosity, or what I call perceived generosity. So, because at the end of the day, you still have to make money as well.
Of course you do, but you also want to be in a position where you want people to walk in the venue, walk in the door, and immediately feel like they're important.
Oh, without a doubt, they are. As we've said, they are the most important part of the business.
So is the secret remembering the name of somebody who's been there once or twice before, or is it just knowing that somebody in particular just loves drinking a glass of rosé? Or
it's amazing what you remember. I am hopeless with names. What was your name? Darren? But I am hopeless with names, but you remember what people eat and you remember what they drink. And when they walk in the door, you want them to feel like they're your long-lost friend, whether they've been there once, the first time, or they've been there 10 times. And then looking after them when they're in there. A lot of people spend a lot of money on fit-out and marketing and social media about getting them to their venue.
And public relations.
And public relations. But then when they're there, they don't look after them. And that's the key. Look after them and they'll spread the word.
Well, they become your greatest ambassadors. I mean, there's that very old adage in this industry that if you go somewhere and have a bad meal, you'll tell 20 people the next day. If you go somewhere and have a good meal, you'll tell 20 people in the next 3 months.
Well, my favourite saying is, you're only good as your last meal.
Absolutely.
So for 19 years, you might have been serving great meals, but a customer will come in once and they'll have a bad meal or a bad experience. It's not even about food. You know,
it could be about service. It could be about wonky table.
It's just food. It's not like, you know, a great friend of mine said to me once, we're not saving lives here. It's just food. Good food is a given.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, if you're serving crap food, you're not going to get. You're not going to.
Well, you don't belong in the industry.
Exactly.
Because you don't care. And I mean, that's what it's about. So for those that remember Mietta's, which is now your home and has been for 20 years in North Fitzroy, you knew Mietta?
I did know Mietta and Tony Knox. In actual fact, when I took over Mietta's, or Matteo's, or what was then Cafe Giordano's, I invited Tony Knox and Mietta in for dinner, and it was the first time they'd been into the venue since they left the venue. And between Mietta's and myself, there was 9 years, 7 owners.
Wow.
And because it was in 89, I think, I'm not sure when they sold, I think it was about 85.
Be thereabouts.
And they sold to a group called the Sardi Brothers, and there was a crash. And then, and everyone that opened afterwards were going down market and thinking that the Brunswick Street would overflow over Alexander Parade. But in the 20 years that I've been there, it's just the same places are just turning over and over and over. And you talk about 20 weeks. I've seen them last a lot less than
20 weeks. You began with traditional Italian cuisine at Matteo's, and then you made a bit of a switcheroo to French. And now you are...
Well, that's when I was saying before about evolution. There's an old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. I actually disagree with that. I think in the food industry, you have to change, or with a lot of things, you've got to change, keep it fresh, so we evolved. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, it's out there already. Is next year, for our 21st birthday of the restaurant, we will go back to Italian. But proper Italian. I always said, if I'm going to do Italian, I'm going to do proper Italian.
Now, what is proper Italian?
Regional. It's all about the regions. So what we're planning to do, and I'm actually got a trip to Italy next month in August and also in January.
Is that taking yourself on a bit of a birthday holiday as well?
As well, yeah, maybe.
Maybe a little bit.
And we'll do regions. So we'll do a different region every year.
Okay.
So the first one being Italy will be Rome. So we'll do Roman food influenced by Rome, and it'll be a winter, summer, autumn, spring menu for Rome. Then we'll do Tuscany, or we'll do Sicily.
Yep.
And then it'll change every year.
Joy 94.9.
Before we go on with Matteo's, there's somebody who probably knows as much about your career as you do. It's somebody to whom you're quite close, I think. He is the CEO of the Restaurant and Caterers Association. His name is John Hart. Good afternoon, Mr. Hart.
Yes, good afternoon.
We are celebrating the career of Matteo Pignatelli. I believe you've got a few stories to tell us.
Don't tell the bus story.
Go on, tell the bus story. I want to know the bus story.
Yes, there's too many stories, but what a great career and an amazing person that's leading up our association as our national president.
Well, I was about to say, he is the national president, and sort of shows a very long-standing commitment to restaurant and caterers.
No one else wanted to do it.
The last man standing. No, look, I mean,
and I was actually really in America when they voted me in.
Oh, really? So he didn't actually have a choice. John, tell us a bit about your association with Matteo and what his contribution to restaurant and caterers has meant.
Well, I mean, I've obviously known Matteo for a long, long time, and particularly through his chairmanship of the Victorian branch and presidency of that branch prior to that. So, you know, all through that time, he's been able to provide the leadership that the industry needed. You know, the connections that he's got through the industry are just extraordinary. And you know, I've never met anyone out there around our industry who doesn't have anything but respect for them. So it really is great to have someone with that sort of level of influence.
John, I'm going to cut in and I'm going to be a little rude. We're really struggling with our broadcast tower, so we're only sort of getting every second word from you, which is incredibly unfortunate. There is some weather playing havoc with our broadcast tower. We believe it's about to be repaired, but
right.
That's better. Whatever you just did then, stop and keep talking.
Well, I'll launch back out into the appreciation, but look, really to say that you know, Matteo's respect you know, the people in the industry have nothing but respect and admiration for him. And that's why we have him in the position that we have. And, you know, it really does a lot for the respect with which the industry is held to have Matteo in that role. You know, it's not just because he's been around for ages. It's because everyone respects him and understands the contribution he's made.
Why do you think there is such high regard for him?
Well, I mean, it's just the way he runs his business and the way he conducts himself. I mean, the business is you know, absolutely beyond reproach. You know, the quality of product, the quality of service, you know, just speaks for itself. And it's that sort of commitment to excellence and then the way in which he deals with that, you know, being a very down-to-earth and honest person and just doesn't let that sort of quality go to his head. So
sometimes I'm just in here watching the head swell as you're talking, John.
Yeah, it's not swelling, is it?
How do you find that?
Can I interrupt? Yes, well, yeah. Sometimes honesty is not the best policy, especially in hospitality in our game where you're dealing with people's egos. But I think people understand that I would never ask them to do something that I wouldn't do, and I wouldn't suggest something that I don't think is good for my business. Consequently, it'll be good for their business.
How does that praise that John's just heaped upon you sit with you? You are a reasonably humble man at the end of the day.
I don't see it. I just go about my business, you know, tell people what I think. And it's not even respect. There's a mutual respect. I respect them. They respect me. It works both ways. People respect people that are respected.
John, I really want to hear this story about the bus.
Well, every year we have an event in Canberra, which is sort of the hallmark event where we celebrate all our industry lifetime achievers. So essentially anyone that's, you know, been in the industry for 30 years or so, we get them down in Canberra and talking to the politicians and so on. And, you know, we've got to move about 30 people around, so we get a bus every year. Mateo decided...
one year I wasn't drinking, so I was on...
Dry July.
It was dry July. I was doing dry July for about a week.
And so decided he'd be the bus driver. Promptly took the bus under the hotel into the car park to let everybody out, and managed to jam the bus between the roof of the car park and the floor of the car park, just meant that everyone was stuck in the bus for some period of time. So, we just don't let him
Please
drive.
Tell me there was a little esky on the bus or something to keep them refreshed.
Exactly.
They were pretty well refreshed by the end of the night already.
Oh, so this was the end of the night?
The end of the night.
They would have had a ball on the bus. You could have led them in some sort of song.
And after drinking with the politicians, you need to drink.
Yes. Look, we could go on.
Joy, 94.9.
We are celebrating the career thus far of Mateo Pignatelli, and we have on the phone a buddy of his who was telling us a great story about a bus being jammed in a hotel car park not so long ago. John Hart, who's the president of the Restaurant and Caterers Association. No, sorry, CEO of the Restaurant and Caterers Association nationally, because you are the national president, yes?
I am indeed.
What does that mean? What's the job entail for him, John?
Well, it's leading the industry, chairing all our meetings and basically... you know, keeping our board members under control, which is no mean feat, I've got to say.
I see it more as a conduit. It's the industry tells me what they want to tell me, and they tell me in restaurant talk or industry talk, catering and restaurant talk. Then I tell John in restaurant talk, and then he translates it into government talk.
Right.
Because we speak two different languages. I don't know if you know the people and the government.
Yes. There is the government, then there's the rest of us. And in government, you learn to speak
careful, slowly.
And you must incorporate a whole bunch of pauses. Repeat every second or third word, something along those lines.
Not to say that the industry we've got faults as well. Let's not.
Oh, indeed, we have.
Yeah. But you know.
John, I guess your role is the lobbying side and bringing to the attention of government and I guess via the media consumers the industry's point of view on some issues. And I think one of the biggest issues we face is a skill shortage. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, definitely. And that's probably one of the most difficult ones to communicate because government sees, you know, industry struggling to get enough people to do the job, but also sees a fairly high youth unemployment rate. So it's one of those areas that's really a difficult one to address in policy terms. But certainly our skill shortage is very deep.
And Mateo, you'd agree that it's not anyone that can work in our industry. It's not one of those things, well, here's a whole bunch of unemployed, here's an industry that needs staff, let's smash them together, because that doesn't necessarily work.
But like in any industry, there's not, it's for everyone. Like, I can't play football, you know, I can't be a radio announcer. So it needs a certain type of person for the industry. And you've got to, again, what I was saying before about hospitality, you've got to work at night. You know, I know if I want to join the army, I don't want to join the army and say, I don't want to get shot at, by the way.
I don't look really good in khaki.
So...
and this is for both of you, whilst we've got you, John, if we were to put a call out to those people that are listening that are trying to decide what they want to be when they grow up, and I'm one of those at 45, still haven't made that decision, what are some of the key attributes you need as a human being to be successful in this business? John?
Well, I reckon, it varies position to position, but the reality is you need to have a passion for doing what you do. And really the people that are successful in our industry, are in love with food. They have a passion and a drive to be in our industry and to be of service. And if you can combine those things, that's really what makes a successful person in our business. And there's a lot of people out there with those skills. Not all of them make it into our industry.
Matteo, from your point of view?
Attention to detail is my big thing. It's and following through.
Mm.
And don't be a gunner, be a doer.
And an ability to smile.
Smile, even when you're not, you might be sad on the inside or angry on the inside, just smile and always a sense of hospitality.
Because you don't know the sort of day your customer is having, and they might be there for a particular purpose, and it may not always be a happy or a celebratory purpose.
That's something that, funny enough, Mieta O'Donnell taught her. She used to say, kill them with kindness.
Mm.
If someone's being
an asshole of a customer.
Yeah, I don't know if you're allowed to
say that. I can say that. It's in context.
If you kill them with kindness, just be... They just feel small, and they just you'll turn them around.
Mm. John, I'll get one more comment from you before you go. If you were to sum up Matteo's career that you're aware of and your association with him, how would you do so?
Yeah, don't write me off just yet. By the way.
Oh, I think that's a good point too. It's only just begun, really. Look, I think it's trust, admiration, respect, and commitment. All of those things that describe a man who's given a lot of his career so far to the rest of the industry, and I'm sure we'll keep doing that.
John, I'm eternally grateful for your time. I know it's a Saturday and you generally don't work, so I'm...
John works 7 days a week, believe me, 24-7.
Very grateful for your time and glad you could help us celebrate Matteo's career to date.
My absolute pleasure.
Good on you. That's John
Thanks,
Hart.
Thanks, John.
He is the CEO of the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia. Sort of brings me to awards, because you do continually strive for success and to stay at the peak that you've got to and perhaps improve. So how important are awards? How important is two hats every year in the Good Food Guide?
Well, we had two hats for 18 years. 19 years, there was when we changed cuisines, when Brendan came on board, mm-hmm. they automatically took a hat off because we purposely tried to go down market a little bit,
because
mm-hmm. I've always tried to run it like middle of the road type, not fine dining, mm-hmm. not lower market, always sat in the middle. But then as the top end closed, we were naturally just pushed. We weren't pushed to the top. The top came down. So
yes.
You can't see my hand signal, but really that's how we automatically tried to change or reposition ourselves in the market. But, hats, and awards, they're all great. But at the end of the day, it's customers. You can have hats and, stars and forks or whatever. But if you've got no customers...
then you don't have a business.
That's right. Mm. So that's we try to focus on customers and not on awards. Awards are nice. Awards is good for the staff. When we get hats, say, here, guys, this is for you. This is for your hard work. Put it in your resume because you're going to need it later on.
But surely for you, as some sort of recognition for your commitment and the training you offer and all of those things, that all of the skills and all of the power
reward,
that you're providing to your
rewards,
staff.
The rewards for me are when people that come to work with me and then go on and buy their own businesses and are successful in their own businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to see them succeed. And quite a few have done that already. And that's what really chuffs me. And the guys that come to work day in, day out, because this might be hard to believe, but I'm not an easy person to work for.
Really? Middle-aged Italian man?
So it's... I'm pretty tough, but then people come to work with us who eventually want to open up their own business. And a lot of my guys, I've got Cheryl's been there for 10 years, Brendan the chef's been there for 10 years, Charles has been there for a while. So you either last a week or you'll last 10 years or more.
It's exactly how it should be.
Joy 94.9.
Matteo Pignatelli is my guest from Matteo's in North Fitzroy. He's here because he is a legend of our industry. He's highly respected and part of the series of programs that I'm doing.
I'm feeling uncomfortable with the word legend, to be really honest, because I know some legends, you know, and they're great people, and I'm only 49. For another week. But yeah.
It can still make you a legend. I've had Raymond Capaldi and Miss Pearl was from...
she's a legend. She's a goddess, not a legend.
Well, she's a very naughty girl. She's a brilliant woman. So, yes, I choose who's legends and who's not.
Okay, fair enough.
And one of your other good buddies, Greg Maloof, was our first legend.
Yes, he's... it was, and when he was... inducted, even with the Food and Wine Festival, he felt a bit. I think he was only about 44 then. Mm. 44. So
you can have a very big impact on this industry at a young age.
You can, yes, and he certainly has.
So. Mm. And you've also done so. Just suck it up, whether you like it or not. Have you thought about? I mean, and it's after 20 years, it's probably a silly question, but have you thought about a second venue or a third venue or an empire?
Every year I think about a second venue, and in actual fact, that's why I got into the Restaurant and Catering Association, is that I thought...
You want to see who's going bust so you can take over their venue chief?
Not at all. For years and years, while I've been going through the industry, I've noticed that people who have opened second venues have worked twice as hard and made half as much.
Correct.
So this way, I've still got my own restaurant. Mm. I'm working twice as hard, but I'm still making the same amount of money because I'm not sinking it into another business.
Correct.
So, and that's why I haven't thought about that. Also, the restaurant's large. I've got it's a 200-seater restaurant.
It's a big venue.
So, in fact, I look at it as three venues in one. So, it's under the same roof. You can't be in two places at the same time. You don't want to leech off your existing business to go to for those customers to go to another business. And most importantly, I'm on my own. I don't have financial backing.
Which is quite rare.
Which is very rare. So I'm owner-occupier. Having said all that, next year when we go to Italian, Brendan and I, who have for 10 years...
We'll
open up another venue together.
Okay.
And what I'll do then is do the model, which a few people have done, is where I'll get a front of house person, I'll get a chef, which obviously will be Brendan, and myself. We'll go with three-way partners, and they run it.
Yep.
You've got to let them go. There's such great talent coming through the ranks.
And a lot of that talent who don't have the financial capability of going into a first-time business.
They don't have the 100% of the capital.
Correct.
But they've got to put in 25%, and obviously it'll be 25, 25, and 50%. So I'll give them the backing, the infrastructure, or I don't know what you call it, the back of house type of support. And then they have to put it good. Unless your balls are, am I allowed to say balls on?
Yeah, of course you are.
Unless your balls
are. You can
balls
even drop the F bomb once or twice an hour if it's in context.
Unless your balls are on the line, you're not making the right decision.
Well, you've got to have skin in the game at the end of the day. And that's what's been the biggest challenge? So you've been doing this you've been in the industry for 30 years. You've been running this venue for 20 years as an owner-operator.
A couple of things I think it would be. The biggest, and I think, and I wouldn't say it's a regret, is the loss of family time, about spending time with my kids. You know, I've got a daughter who's 18 now, a son who's turning 10 on Tuesday, Michael, and Natasha is 15, so you don't get to see a lot of them. And that is, I think, the biggest downside, I think, of it. Maybe them coming to work at the business, but they don't want to work with Dad. So I think that's been the biggest, you know, if I would say negative, if there is a negative. But the other thing is, when you get through your ranks, some really talented kids coming through who you can just tell. They just ooze potential, and most of them go on. Because what will happen is, you know, I'll move them on to work for someone else, because even though they don't want to move, I'll get them to work somewhere different where they learn.
Set of skills or a different set of knowledge.
Different environment. Every business is run different, and to move that. But then the ones that really are sad is when... the guys that are guys and girls that are coming through who make the wrong, what I feel are the wrong decisions, and then ultimately affect their life.
And those decisions could be quite broad, a broad set of challenges, whether it's they choose to leave the industry for the wrong reasons.
Or, you know, someone, because they know they're good, they say, oh, you've worked for Mateo for 2 years, oh, come and work for us, we'll give you a head chef's job.
Yep. And they last there 3 months.
And last 3 months, and then from there it's a downward spiral. Mm.
And then they're... Anyway, we won't visit that too closely.
But I feel more for, you know, I really feel for the regional businesses.
Mm.
And I just wish that there was something else I could do to help them. And even the farmers, these guys that are working so hard and because of government regulations are being screwed basically. My challenge is in the businesses, it's you make what you can of it, and always look at the positives. And my father used to say to me, you need to dance to the beat. When the music's fast, you dance fast. When you're slow, you do the slow dance or you do the waltz. So and just if you think and stay on top of it, it's not really that difficult. It's not rocket science. At the end of the day,
putting food on a plate and putting a plate in front of somebody.
Yeah, smiling and saying, thank you. Mm. Thank you for coming. Please come again. Tell your friends. Bring your friends.
So we talk a lot on this program about, it's been called the MasterChef effect, the change in the last 5 years in the expectation of the customer, their better knowledge.
I've always gone on record to say I've actually enjoyed MasterChef. Mm-hmm. I've watched it.
I'm not counting it. I was just going to ask you your opinion. So there
I think it's great that the customers are now more educated about food.
Mm.
And it really challenges us and it keeps us improving and keeps us not so much ahead of the game, but it, obviously there are the couple of negatives. It's getting kids interested in cooking and food as well, but you know, unlike maybe not MasterChef, a couple of the other ones that are a little bit more reality TV type,
rather than skill based.
Skill based, but then unfortunately you get the drawbacks. You get people coming in and say, "I found a bone in my fish." You know, you would be knocked off MasterChef. I never have got into the whole MasterChef. I just don't have the time. So rather than go down that celebrity status area, I'd rather just go, and which I have. I've gone down and giving back to the industry, which has been, it's been great to me. It's been very, it's allowed me to put kids through school. It's allowed me to employ lots of people and develop the industry.
And it's allowed you to follow that thing that, as you say, was instilled in you when you were very young by your family, which is a love of service.
Well, people say to me, oh, how does it feel you're an owner of a business? I said, well, I grew up owning a business. I grew up in it. So for me, it's just, it's another day. I don't walk around saying, I own Mateo's restaurant. Mm. I am Mateo.
Then you wouldn't have been there 20 years if that were the case.
Well, I'm there 20 years, and let's not kid. And everyone knows it's all about the team. Yeah, I've got a great team, you know, who work very hard.
So I want to go back to that MasterChef effect. I think I agree with you that it's been incredible for people's knowledge of food, but is there a fear that it's going to go too far where all of a sudden everybody's a critic?
Well, everyone is a critic anyway, so and they always have been, and they mightn't voice it, but everyone's always a critic.
And then to the rise of citizen journalism where everyone's a critic again. You know, you've got an iPhone and an internet connection, all of a sudden you're a restaurant critic.
Well, you know, and the thing about that is at the end of the day, it's always been around, it's just now that they're broadcasting it.
Yep.
Because at the end of that, you have to listen to your customer.
Mm.
And if 10 customers are telling you your portions are too small or your service is too slow, at the end of the day, whether it's broadcasted or not, it's going to affect your business.
Mm.
So what I don't like is what's happening about other businesses fraudulently, you know, maybe slagging some other businesses, or when they're writing their own reviews, I just think it's unethical. But then,
that will always come back to bite somebody on the ass, though, I would hope.
I think it will, but yeah, and I think the general public aren't stupid. At the end of the day, that's when I look at it. You know, and I like reading the reviews, and we don't have all positive reviews on our site.
Mm.
And it's a different people like different things. So you can't try to please 100%. Even though we strive to please 100% of the people
all the time.
If I get 90%, I'm happy. 90% yep. of the people. I'm happy with that.
And what's your trick for getting them back if they haven't had such a good time?
Understanding what they didn't enjoy, and if it's something that I can't fix or it doesn't match our ethos, then I just let it go. I don't want them to come back, because they're not going to come back and enjoy it anyway.
They're not going to come back and be happy, no.
So it's better to say, listen, and I know I've got people that ring up, and when you talk to them on the phone and I could tell straight away they're not going to enjoy it. So I say to them, listen, it's probably better you don't come here. And I would actually recommend somewhere else.
Mm. Who's the poor sucker that you recommend them to?
Well, it depends. Because if you listen to them, and again, it's all about listening.
Mm.
What are they saying? What do they want? Okay, go here. You'll like this.
Mm.
A lot of those are my relatives as well. So,
right. What's that one... little nugget of advice? You may have got it from your father, you may have got it from Greg Maloof, you may have got it from John Hart. What's that one little piece of advice that's always stuck with you and has been the cornerstone to your success?
There is no I in team.
I'll draw you a picture that actually proves that wrong at some stage. that's probably a very good philosophy to have. There is a question that we had via... Mike from St Kilda, who called in and asked a question via the front desk. What do you think of restaurants that charge for bread?
Ooh.
Contentious issue.
It is. I don't know why they do it. I just think it's, and for sure that it's, you know, it costs some money, but build it into the cost of the meal.
Mm. What is the cost of a bowl of bread and a bit of olive oil and balsamic?
Well, it can be quite expensive. Mm. You think about the problem nowadays is the labour. The labour cost is so expensive, even to buy the bread in. And then you get people that are coming in and only eat bread and olive oil. And if you're not charging them, so if they're only having that, then it's okay. But even then, it's not okay. I don't think you should be charged. It's like a staple. It's like charging for water.
Mm.
I have a pet hate about
still or sparkling.
Still or sparkling. And I don't want to feel intimidated by saying, feel like a scumbag by saying, no, I'll have tap.
Well, and that's now what, just in the last little while, that's what restaurants have, I was in a restaurant yesterday for lunch, and somebody said, you know, do you want still sparkling or tap? And I went, tap, please, because Melbourne's water is bloody sensational.
Well, we have a thing, and it's amazing, whenever I get some new front of house staff, they say, oh, I notice you don't push the mineral water. Because our theory is that I'd rather a customer come in 10 times and spend $100 a head or whatever it is a head than 5 times.
And feeling like they're being stooged.
So when our water policy is to go to the table and automatically say, we serve tap water, are you happy with that? Would you prefer
a sparkling or a
mineral? And automatically you're getting them on the right foot. So
they start to trust you.
So we're in the psychological business. At the end of the day, that's what hospitality is.
It is indeed. Matteo, it's been a pleasure to have you here for an hour to talk through.
It's gone quick.
It has gone quick. To talk through what has been the past 20 years. You are celebrating a rather important birthday in a little while. So for your 35th birthday, we do wish you a very hearty congratulations.
thank you.
What's the next 20 years hold? We've got about a minute, less than a minute, to sort of work through what that all means.
Nurturing kids that are going through and giving them an opportunity to succeed and helping them do that.
God, you did that in 14 seconds.
Do you like that?
So really, brevity is impressive. So people can find you in North Fitzroy on...
533 Brunswick Street, and it's north of Alexander Parade.
Excellent. And the website?
Is www.mateos.com.au.
Matteo,
or some people say Matteo's.
Matteo's, excellent. They don't understand the Italians. As I said, it's been a pleasure to have you here. It's been a joy to be able to unpack some of your career, and I look forward to celebrating another 20 years at the restaurant with you.
Thank you, Pete.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.